Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Natalie Saves the World, one podcast at a time. Today, I'm very excited to have someone very special in my life here on the podcast, my mom. My mom's name is Tara Riley. She's a very talented artist and educator. She's been in the art field for over 30 years. And I'm really excited to have her here today with me. We're going to be talking about art as a vehicle for creativity, as a vehicle for a career, and as a vehicle for reinvention and healing. And I'm really excited to have my mom here with you all to share some of her wisdom. So welcome, Tara. Welcome, Mom. Is there anything I forgot in that intro? Anything you want to add?
I want to add, first of all, that I'm really happy to be here. And thank you for even considering working with me on this. It's quite an honor. And that was a lovely introduction.
Yay. Yeah. Happy to hear. Okay, great. So we're talking today about art, and not just the pretty kind, but art that can save you, art that can really heal you, helps you start over, and helps you grow and even change your life. My first question for you, I want to talk about the concept of art as a tool for healing and emotional resilience, especially restoration. So Mom, what is a moment in your life when art really helped you process something or heal from an emotionally difficult situation, process something painful?
I can think of a lot of examples, Natalie. One that really stands out for me is when I was recovering from a divorce and I had time to myself for the first time in over a decade. And time to myself, meaning like quiet time where I could reflect and be introspective and really take care of my own healing and recovering from that experience. That was a wonderful opportunity to dive deep into my art practice once again.
Do you think that everybody is born creative, or is it only certain people?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone is born creative. There's no doubt in my mind that we are all humans are meant to create. We can make tools. We can make clothing. We can create shelter for ourselves. It's innate in our humanity. But right. I also believe that a lot of people don't recognize or even acknowledge that they are creative. I've often, especially as a teacher, heard people say, oh, I'm not very creative, or oh, I have no artistic ability. And creativity can be expressed in so many ways. It's not just artistic expression. It's not always, you know, the ability to draw or sculpt something or play something beautiful on an instrument, but often it's expressed and how a person presents themselves, or how the environment they create around themselves in their home or in their garden, or the way that they cook and arrange the food on a plate. I mean, it could be business skills. Business is a super creative industry.
Even engineering, that's very creative.
Engineering also. Right. I mean, there's so many different ways that it can manifest. I think that sometimes people don't have the confidence because they either didn't get the support that they needed or the encouragement, or something traumatic happened to shut them down, and they fall into some unhealthy behaviors or unhealthy patterns of behaving that blocks them or stops them from expressing their creativity. It's like they become numb, or they almost are in denial of the fact that they are creative and they have tremendous potential.
Kind of similar to the concept of writer's block, like when someone just, you know, can't be creative, they max out on their creativity.
I think, yeah, maybe. No, writer's block is different. I think writer's block is when you've exhausted your ideas and you just need to re-nurture. Mm. You need to refill that space by putting in new information and new stimuli and new ideas. Right. I think those are different things.
Okay.
I think this is a deeper type of more psychological denial or blockage.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Wow. So for somebody who's going through a tough time, whether that be a breakup, some form of loss, some form of identity change, how would you recommend they get started using creativity to help them heal?
That's a really interesting question. And it might be different for a lot of people, but the most immediate thing that comes to mind for me is to journal, to start writing down ideas, to start writing a wish list. Oh, I would love to do this with my life. I would, you know, 5 things I'd really always wanted to do, 10 things that I would do if money were no object, places I'd like to go, There's hundreds of prompts you could use to get lists going and to get stream of consciousness going. But journaling also helps you to get in touch with your soul. It takes you, again, inside into your quiet, pure,
your deepest self.
Yeah, into your deepest, most spiritual place. And you don't have to ever share it with anyone. You can tear it up, you can burn it, or you can save it and then reflect on it later. And
yeah,
that's the easiest thing. Another trick that helps when you feel somewhat blocked is to just change your environment. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need to go somewhere you've never been. If you're at home, it might mean rearranging the furniture or moving the things around, cleaning out your closet, decluttering. All those things help clarify and remove blockages. They remove clutter. Clutter just keeps your mind preoccupied and it keeps you, holds you back.
Amazing. Yeah, so true. Sometimes even just being somewhere beautiful can be a great source of inspiration.
Yeah. Spending time in nature.
Yeah.
Those
awesome.
Really helpful things.
Great ideas. I think definitely for me, something that helped me when I was going through a tough time is just focusing on these different creative outlets. Definitely journaling. Journaling is great. Even if you just burn write someone a letter and burn it or rip it up afterwards, it's very healing. But also podcasting even for me has been very therapeutic, and it's in a way very creative and a very creative outlet. And it's really helped me in my healing journey, just processing, getting a lot of things out there, in ways I never expected.
Natalie, it's so exciting that you found podcasting, and who knew that this is the direction that you would go. But as I was preparing to come visit you, I was going through old photos and I realized that you have been a performer from the get-go.
I mean,
whether it was being in ice shows or musical plays as a young girl, dancing.
Or dressing up.
And costumes. You also play dress up and you'd love to make costumes. So it seems like a natural direction for you. And I'm really excited because you also have this wonderful intellectual side that you get to express in podcasting, and emotional too.
Yeah.
It's awesome if you can totally help people. That's a fun way to be able to help people and reach them.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the same. Ultimately, like as much as I'm enjoying it and it helps me, I also ultimately want to help others as well, especially those who have been through pain or breakups or heartbreak or just tough times in their life. Hopefully help them through some insight and some advice as someone who's been there.
And that's one of the most powerful things that any creative endeavor can do, is not just what it does for the maker, but for the audience or the viewer or the recipient.
Right.
They are receiving tremendous gifts that benefit them spiritually, intellectually,
totally,
emotionally. Yeah, in so many ways. It's really a wonderful way to contribute.
And when we give to others, we gain a lot in return. So it's a win-win. Yeah. Definitely. Okay. So now I want to talk a little bit about just your personal journey, how you were able to turn your creativity into a career. So my first question for you was, what were your earliest dreams career-wise that you were not necessarily able to come to fruition or make them happen?
Well, as a young adult, I wanted to design costumes. I knew how to sew. I learned all the needle arts from my grandmother, sewing, knitting, embroidering, crocheting, cross stitch, all the traditional old work that women did. And I knew that I was happy when I was doing those things. Maybe it was the zen or just being lost in the moment that I enjoyed so much.
Doing something with your hands too.
Everyone always said, oh, you're so creative, blah, blah, blah. But I had never studied art. I never had time to sit down and draw or paint anything or really focus on art, yet it was all around me. So my first dream was to become a costume designer.
Wow.
I thought, well, I could take all these skills that I have and make them, you know, make beautiful things for the movies. And I especially love historic film and fiction and wanted to make historic costumes. So I pursued that path at university and made costumes for a small local theater group for several years. They have a lifestyle in the theater that didn't work for me, though, because I'm a morning person.
And
theater people are late night people.
Oh, yeah.
They stay up after the show and they party a little bit. And I'm a girl who likes to get up early and work out in the morning.
I know that.
Or doing yoga or running, you know, miles around the block. I'm just a morning person. It's my best and favorite time of day. So that's when I switched to fine art. So I didn't actually make the transition to fine art till I was in my mid-20s.
All right. Yeah, it's tough.
So it steered itself in a different direction as I discovered more about myself and learned more about myself. And I went and applied to art school.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, your experience at school?
Yeah, I went to a really fabulous art school. The best thing that happened there was my exposure to living, working artists.
What was the school?
Oh, the School of the Art Institute in Chicago.
Of Chicago.
Mm. Which is a conceptual art school. It's not an academy or atelier. It's really a conceptual school.
Hands-on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hands-on. And they want you to explore all media and try everything in your undergraduate program so that you can then spend the rest of your life figuring out what you're going to do with it.
Right.
Which is what I've been doing.
It's tricky. Yeah.
It is tricky. And for me, it was a little overwhelming at first because once I got there, I realized that most of the other students have been making art since they were like 10 or
little.
5. And right. I had all these skills that I hadn't yet developed. Mm-hmm. So I felt I was always playing catch up. And I also was working.
Right.
I was working to support myself and living on my own throughout the whole experience. So I didn't probably benefit from the social relationships. I didn't get to network. I don't have a single friend from that experience.
Wow.
With the exception of when I did a study abroad, I did manage to make that happen. And I didn't have to work during that time.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience studying abroad?
Oh, it was awesome. I went to Florence, Italy. It was a dream come true for me. I had studied Italian in high school and in college.
And you're half Italian, right? Oh, your roots.
Side, yeah. Second generation.
Mm-hmm. But,
I was always interested in that beautiful language. And so I got to go. I saved up money. I worked really hard and saved money to go study over there. And it was the first time in my life that I could just focus on studies.
Oh, studies, yeah, right.
Because I'd had a job since I was 14 and I always had to provide for my own financial needs and stability. And the opportunity to just focus on art was amazing. And it's like Disneyland for the Renaissance there. I mean, it's just overwhelming, the amount of history and art. And I love all the allegory and it was just a generally great experience. I would encourage anybody who has that opportunity to go study somewhere else to do it.
Awesome. Well, now I want to talk a little bit about just art as a career. Do you think it's truly possible to make a living from your art? Or do you think that something gets lost when creativity becomes a career?
That is a loaded question.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
It's definitely possible to make a living in a full-time career out of your art.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be
fulfilling
or even a straight path.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So there may have to be several revenue streams. There may have to be commissions. There may have to be teaching like I do. Many artists choose to do like graphic design or do commercial work.
Marketing designs.
Yeah. And is something lost? I got to say yes. I got to say that when you are working for someone else and trying to meet their needs, it's not the same kind of experience. You're selling your skill and your knowledge, but you're not necessarily working from
the heart,
place of the same in your heart, right? Mm-hmm. The same level of inspiration in your heart. In fact, I'm in a networking group right now where some of the artists are struggling with their commissions because they're not feeling it. And yet they have a deadline, you know, and it's like, this isn't what I would really want to be doing, or it isn't what I really choose to do.
Right.
Early in my career, I used to paint murals and I would go into people's homes and paint their children's rooms. It was fun.
Yeah.
I paid well.
There's a lot of joy in that.
There was joy in it. And knowing that that family was going to continue to enjoy my work for an extended period of time was very joyful. But it wasn't, as shall we say, emotionally challenging or intellectually stimulating.
Right.
But it paid the bills. And that's part of it. I think that's part of the reason I enjoy teaching, is because teaching is so gratifying.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, your experience with teaching. How did you transition into doing that? Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're currently doing?
It's a funny transition, and I haven't even talked about my trade. I went to trade school while I was in high school and became a hairdresser. And that's largely how I supported myself as an artist.
Which is also very creative, by the way.
Very creative. But after a while, I got bored of it.
Yeah.
The people kept me going, probably longer because I was learning so much from my clients. Right. So I stuck with it because the relationships were so meaningful to me. But the actual work has its limitations. Like any right. media, once you master a media, you know, you can get bored of it.
You max out.
You move into something else and try right. something else to keep challenging yourself. So I had begun teaching hairdressers. I taught them coloring and texture techniques, and I worked for manufacturers, and I got to travel and get out of the salon. And I realized right. that I'm comfortable speaking in front of a group, that I'm a natural in a position of leadership, and that I enjoyed the teaching process. So that's when I made the transition to become an art educator. I went to grad school in my 40s.
Wow.
We were in high school. Amazing. And I got a master's in art education
right.
at that point and tried teaching. No one was hiring teachers.
Yeah, it was tough.
The state was in a crisis financially and they were cutting art programs and I didn't find a job. So I became a realtor.
Right. So many reinventions, yeah, which we'll talk about
resilient.
As well.
You have to be resilient.
Constantly reinventing yeah, ourselves. Yeah, yeah. But that's amazing. And I heard now, well, you told me a little bit about how you've been doing teaching workshops on the silk scarves. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little yeah. about that?
That's been really fun. So a few years ago, I started painting on silk, which is something that I learned in art school and hadn't done in 30 years. And
So it's like a silk screen?
No, it's actually a stretched piece of silk that I paint on. It's like a watercolor type technique, but I found myself enjoying the process and enjoying the materials and enjoying that I could easily ship it.
Right.
It wasn't
not like a big
my walls. It was easy to fold up and set in an envelope and ship it.
Right.
So I'm in several artist organizations and other artist friends asked me to teach them to use these materials. So mm-hmm. I started teaching in my garage. I set up a studio.
Wow. Oh, amazing.
In my garage.
Yeah.
And I got groups to come in and paint scarves and they spend a few hours. And it was so joyful for me to be able to share this process. And also I learned so much from the students. But I recently pursued and was hired as a member of the faculty at the Fine Line Creative Arts Center, which
amazing.
Is in St. Charles, Illinois. It is an amazing place. And I'm really excited to be
so fun.
Part of that community. And I've really loved teaching there. I found that I really like working with adults.
Yeah, yeah. Adults can be fun yeah. for sure. And what about your art residency? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I taught there too. I forgot about that. Last year in the summer, I worked as
2024. Okay.
Summer, end of summer. I was in the YMCA of the Rockies in Estes Park, Colorado. They have a beautiful art building there where they have all kinds of hands-on experiences for people to do making and all media.
Crafting as well.
Crafting. And it's called the Art and Design Building or Craft and Art Building. I don't remember, but it's a large building with several studios and classrooms in it. And I mm-hmm. was teaching there mostly jelly plate printing, which is a super fun activity, and doing demos in their silk painting area as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was super fun.
And what sort of thing did you teach? Did you also teach the silk scarves as well?
Or? Not there. They have a room there where they sell the visitors or the guests. They sell them a template for painting on silk. They got a silk program
nice.
In play, but it's more like color by number. And that's okay. the way I teach.
Right. Right, right.
So I taught gel plate printing, which is a wonderful, fun medium for anyone with any skill level. Mm-hmm. It's a way of mono printing. If you remember in school learning the linoleum block printing where you cut into the block and you print it and stick.
Oh, yeah.
Similar
right.
to that, except that you don't do any cutting. You just paint on the gel plate and then you press the paper on top and you can make impressions. And
right.
It's very satisfying and fun and fast. Yes.
Awesome.
It was suitable for people who wanted to come in for 2-hour workshops.
I think something that's so interesting about these workshops, I recently did a painting workshop and we were tasked with creating a tree, just painting any tree that we wanted. Mm-hmm. And what I thought was so interesting was that we all were given the same materials, the same colors, the same paintbrushes, etc. And yet all of the end results were so incredibly different. And I just thought, how neat is that? How special is that? When people are tasked with creating the exact same prompt, given the exact same instructions, the art that they create is so, so different and unique.
that is actually one of the most beautiful and joyful things about the creative experience, is that each human has a unique voice and a unique form of expression. And given the same materials, whether I was teaching in a middle school classroom or teaching adults or seasoned artists, you're going to get a different result from every person. Yeah.
It's very fun.
Yeah. I'm glad you did that. I'll bet it was fun.
It was awesome.
And that's why I think people really like doing those workshops.
Because you get to see the different results. Yeah.
Your students too. You get ideas. They inspire you.
Totally.
They maybe choose a color you never would have thought of, or make a mark in a way you never tried.
Totally.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Awesome. Okay, so what advice would you give someone who is trying to start a business with their creativity, whether that means freelancing, being an entrepreneur, or just carving out enough creative time for their art?
I would say, first of all, you have to be consistent.
Right.
To see anything grow, it has to be watered consistently.
Right.
So you can plant a seed, but if you go and ignore that seed, it's not going to go anywhere. So having a consistent practice is crucial.
Setting up a schedule for yourself.
Even if it's just once a week, you know, when you can squeeze in a couple hours, or whether it's every day, but get a consistent practice going and things will slowly start to grow. The second thing is not expecting perfection. So it's not going to be a straight and narrow path. There will be setbacks.
Right.
Life sometimes gets in the way. And you have to forgive yourself for the mistakes you're going to make and for the risks that don't work out. But you can't be afraid to take those risks.
So peaks and valleys.
One foot in front of the other. But, you know, sometimes you're going to trip and fall. And, and you'll have to get back up and keep going.
Nobody's perfect.
And also keep your mind and your heart open to being able to change if it doesn't work.
Right. Pivot. And sometimes things, we think that we're going to do one path and then our eyes are opened up to something totally different that we hadn't initially planned for. And that's beautiful as well, that being open-minded and open to those changes, changing your direction unexpectedly.
So the third thing is that you need to create some community for support.
Totally.
So meeting up with other people who are doing similar challenges, whether it is a business group or a bunch of other writers or visual artists, get together with them. If you're going on a creative, risky creative journey, not a lot of people just look and roll their eyes and they think you're a little nuts. You
know?
So you've got to surround yourself with other people who are taking similar risks and on that path, and they will help to support and nurture you along the way. You nurture each other. So community is really as important as consistency, and also forgiving and being willing to pivot, as you say, when things don't work out. You know, not
the way you had.
Yeah, it's really risky.
So. Yeah. But I think, exactly. And we need to forgive ourselves and be kind to ourselves. And sometimes something unexpected can turn into something even better than we had originally planned. And I think also, especially for me with doing ceramics, I didn't even mention this, but I also as a hobby love to do ceramics for years on the wheel, especially. And sometimes the mistakes actually end up turning into the most beautiful, unique pieces because it's different and it's not so cookie cutter. And I think especially now in this era of AI and robotics where everything is perfect and flawless every time, or flawless, right? What's going to be more and more special, especially with art and artisan products, is something that's different and handcrafted and unique.
In the visual arts right now, we're calling that authenticity. You want to show the rawness.
The flaws.
Yes. You want to show that it's not made. And that's why I think my silk scarves are so popular and special, because they don't look like they've been printed by a digital printing machine.
Right.
And you can see the artist's hand. You can see the brush strokes. You can see where the paint smeared or blurred or ran through the lines. And I think people love it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's unique. And I think as we go forward with technology and AI,
people will crave that more and more. Totally.
And that's why artisan markets have become so popular.
Totally. I agree.
People want to support the independent artists.
So I really agree with what you said about the journey and how, you know, we're never going to be perfect and there's always going to be ups and downs. And sometimes we pivot and take a turn that we weren't necessarily expecting. Mm-hmm. And I can say personally in my own journey, so now I'm trying to launch my own business, a few other side initiatives like this podcast. And they're not necessarily things that I have planned or I knew I wanted to do forever. But, well, actually the podcast I did want to do for a long time. I was just like too afraid to do it.
I didn't know.
But, I think that sometimes in life, especially with work and my journey now with being an entrepreneur, you're doing a million different things. You're kind of running around, like you're wearing many hats. You're doing a lot of different things at once and being pulled in different directions. And you're absolutely right. Like you're never going to be perfect. It's never just this completely perfect straight line. It's always got little peaks and valleys and ups and downs, but ultimately that's what helps you grow.
And the consistency pays off.
Yeah.
That's where the consistency pays off.
Totally. And I think for me with launching my own business, I mean, the path that I'm on right now, I just sort of fell into it. And like we said, with the pivoting, it was just, I pivoted into one direction and then I realized, oh my gosh, there's so many other things that I enjoy and have a passion for. And there's ways to actually make money through those outlets as well. And then it just becomes a win-win-win because you enjoy it. You're helping your clients, you're helping your customers, and you're being creative and getting that creative outlet into the world. I just see it as a win in every aspect.
That's awesome.
And then it doesn't feel like work, right?
No,
when you really love.
No, when you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work. And you never
you enjoy
stop.
Being busy. Yeah. You're like,
yeah,
let's
people
keep
always
going.
Say, a lot of my friends have retired, and I'm like, I don't want to retire. Yeah. I don't want to stop. I love what
I'm
doing.
Yeah, totally.
So I wanted to ask you, just going off of this topic with creativity and reinvention as well with entrepreneurship and business, what does reinvention mean to you at this stage of your life or in this season of your life?
At this season, I am for the first time able to just focus on my art with you and your sister living far away and my stepchildren all independent and on their own. I'm able to really have time to myself in a way that I haven't had since I was in my 20s. And it's been absolutely delightful. And I've seen my art grow in ways that, and my own person has grown in ways that I never could have thought possible before. So I guess,
amazing.
I guess it's a blessing is what it is in this season. And reinvention, I have most of my students end up being many of my students, not all of them, but many of them are in a similar season of their life. And they've set aside, especially women, set aside so many of their creative passions to raise a family.
Right.
And now they are coming back to it. And it is so joyful and playful. And it's like almost like a second childhood, you know, it's like, we get to creatively explore together and try new things together and encourage and support one another. And it's quite lovely, actually. I'm so grateful that I have this time.
Amazing. Yeah. Very happy for you.
So where it will take me, but it's, I'm certainly enjoying the ride.
Amazing. So happy to hear that
Thank
as well.
You. Thank you. The other thing I didn't say about this season is that I don't have to rush.
Yeah.
I spent decades rushing to meet a deadline and rushing to finish things because I only had a couple hours to myself.
Right.
And now I can exhale and be at peace. And it's just joy.
Very special.
Yeah. It's really joy. It allows me to go deeper. It allows me to try harder, make things more refined. It's been just a wonderful, wonderful gift. So more time, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's like a pause.
Yeah. Take your time. Well, because I think with art, we could just do it for hours and hours, right?
A lot of people throw out. You can see if you scroll online, you see a lot of mediocre art just being thrown out there.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. People need to keep creating mediocre art. There's certainly
market for it.
Yeah. It's fine. You know, if you're just making stuff just to make it, but to take your time and make something really good, it's really a blessing. And I'm grateful to have that experience now.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Happy to hear.
Thanks.
So what would you say to someone who's in the later seasons of their life, who's starting over and feels like it's too late to start something new?
I would say it's never too late. I would say
right?
We're all beginners. Honestly, every time you face a blank page, right, or a blank piece of canvas,
a new chapter,
or a new chapter in your life. We're all beginners. Every day,
yeah,
I walk into my studio, I'm a beginner. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to come out of what I'm doing. And so a beginner is, it's a joyful thing, actually, because so often someone who has no creative points of reference can do something totally spontaneous and authentic.
Yeah.
And it can be extremely refreshing. And other artists who've trained for decades look at it and go, wow, I never would have thought of doing that. Or I don't even know if I could do that. So
there's
no reason to not start. You know, life is for living.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we can always reinvent ourselves, as we said, and start over. And I think that a lot of people are just very afraid of the uncertainty.
Well, that's something that then you have to dig deep
and
look at that and see what those voices are that are telling you that you can't do something. And
that's the inner critic.
That's where the real emotional growth happens.
Totally.
Tackling those challenges and trying things you've never tried.
Totally. And I think when we're pushed out of our comfort zones, that's when we grow the most, right?
Yeah. In fact, I recently had an experience where I was accepted into a very prestigious show, and I had some
exciting.
What we call imposter syndrome.
What's the show?
Oh, it's called Art Craft to Wear, Smithsonian Craft to Wear at the Smithsonian Museum. And
in D.C.?
Yeah, Washington, D.C. It's produced by the Smithsonian Women's Committee.
Wow.
They do this once.
Amazing.
And thank you. And I was excited about it.
So when is the show?
Oh, September 26th through the 28th. Just a couple of weeks ago, went through what we call imposter syndrome.
Where
the negative voices in my head were telling me, you can't do that. You don't have enough good work, and your work isn't good enough, and you haven't even been working very hard, and blah, blah, blah. All these voices telling me.
It's like the devil on your shoulder.
Why I couldn't do it, to the point where I was completely frozen.
Wow.
I couldn't do anything. And so I took a break. I gave myself a break. I gave myself permission to not be in the studio for a few days. I went and I rearranged. I cleared clutter out of my space. I wrote down lists of my pros and cons of why I wanted to do it, why I didn't want to do it. I used all these tools that I've discussed earlier in the podcast, and I worked through it. But it still happens. You're not ever impervious to uncertainty because it's always there. It's just life.
Totally. But I think if we can
learn to live with it.
manage
it.
And embrace it.
Well, I don't know about embrace, but for sure learn the tools to cope with it. And
But I think it does. Exactly. Exactly. And I think ultimately it helps us become our best selves.
It's like weeding. You have to weed.
But then you get the garden. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Planting the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So really quickly, rapid fire. Who are some of your favorite artists?
Sandro Botticelli, Italian Renaissance, early Renaissance painter. Contemporary, I love Fiona Ray. She's an abstract expressionist from London, or she lives in England now, UK.
Nice. Yeah. So those are your favorite? Two of your favorites?
Stand out. Yeah. I also love the Art Nouveau movement. You'll see that influence in a lot of my scarves, very organic form, decorative.
Tell me your favorite medium.
Well, I got to say at the moment, it's painting on silk.
Silk scarves.
Yeah, I really am enjoying painting on silk. And also, I like the natural medium, so sometimes acrylic comes in handy, but painting has been my medium for about 20 years.
Amazing.
I love oil and watercolor.
Awesome. Wow. That's a lot. What's your favorite creative ritual?
Morning pages.
Oh.
From Julia Cameron. She's an author.
Artist's Way, right?
The Artist's Way, Julia Cameron. Writing stream of consciousness first thing in the morning, even before you have coffee, but I haven't had coffee.
Mushroom coffee.
Yeah, with my mushroom coffee. Writing three pages of whatever comes to mind just to release and clear your mind. And I do this when I get stuck too with art. I start writing things down, you know, who I am, what my mission is, why I'm doing it, writing affirmations. So I would say writing is my first go-to.
Writing.
Yeah.
Amazing. What's one piece of advice you have for a young creative who's just getting started in their career?
The first one that comes to mind is you have to be patient. And realize that every little step you take gets you closer to your dreams. The second is be kind to yourself and forgive yourself for not being perfect and allow yourself to not be perfect. And the third is anything is possible if you have faith.
Totally. Amazing.
By the way, those are things that I always taught you. I hope I did.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
I think so as well. We are pretty exceptional. So can you talk a little bit about a time that we did something creative together that really stands out to you, that you really remember, that really resonated with you?
Well, when you were little, we made a lot of great costumes.
Yeah. Yeah,
you
yeah.
You and your sister both loved to play dress up, and you were always performing something, whether it was a dance performance.
Ice skating.
And we had a lot of fun with those costumes, I gotta say. And also me being a hairdresser, we went kind of crazy with the hair and the makeup and had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
As an adult, I'd say we've made vision boards together.
And I think
that's a really powerful tool. And I encourage people who are not visual to explore that vision board concept as well as visual people.
But vision boards are very powerful. Yeah. It's like a form of manifestation.
Totally. It's something we've done together and that's been fun. Oh, we also like to cook together.
Oh, yeah.
We have some fun cooking together.
Lots of Thanksgivings. Yeah. Totally. So how does somebody know that they're on the right path, they're on the right track, and they are getting kind of affirmation or any, you know, signs that it's all happening as it should?
You get messages. You get signs. You get flow. One of the things that we hadn't talked about yet is when you're in your creative process and you are so lost in that process that it seems to take control of itself. And it seems that it's just happening through you. You're more of a vehicle or a vessel for that creativity. And it's a wonderful feeling and you have to trust it.
Mm-hmm. And knowing that all your hard work has paid off.
You know that it's paid off in the fulfillment that you get, first of all. And secondly,
you see the fruits of your labor happening.
When you see it finishing and coming together and growing and changing, and then there's the rewards of being able to share it. I think sharing is really important. I don't think you should keep it all to yourself. I think it's meant to be shared because that's where you're giving the gift back.
Totally.
We're given this gift to be able to create, but we have an obligation to be able to share it with others.
Yeah, totally. Being a giver, not a taker.
Right. And we're talking about that through showing the work, you know, putting it out in the universe.
And hopefully spreading joy, right? Yeah. Isn't that your...
Right. Yeah, made with love to spread joy.
That's your slogan, right? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how my audience can connect with you, where they can go to see your work, how they can follow you on your website, social media, etc.
The best place to connect with me is my website. It's called TaraRileyArt.com.
Okay.
When you go there, you can sign up to be on my monthly newsletter.
Awesome.
My newsletter, I talk about what I'm working on. I share photos of stuff that I never post anywhere else.
Upcoming shows?
Upcoming shows are also there. I mentioned that in the newsletter. And then I have a page in my website that says events and workshops. And they're posted there.
Awesome. So like upcoming teaching workshops?
Workshops. I have art exhibits there. I have paintings in a couple of exhibits right now.
They can shop on your website?
You can shop on
Etsy?
My website. It's easier to shop on Etsy, but you can shop on my website.
What would you recommend? Etsy,
at
the website?
Point, the Etsy for scarves, the paintings, you can get off my website. And there's also Fine Line Creative Arts Center in St. Charles, Illinois, which is where I'll be teaching workshops this autumn.
Awesome.
Oh, and of course, the Smithsonian Show.
Yeah.
If you're in the D.C. area, come and see me at the Smithsonian Show September 26th through the 28th. It's in the Arts and Industries Building, which happens to be the oldest museum on the entire museum campus. It's a beautiful old historic building.
Any other shows that you want to mention? Anything else?
Oh, I have a show. I have actually two shows up right now. One is at the Elmhurst Art Museum. It's a tribute to Hokusai. Hokusai inspired group show. I have a piece in that and it's up until September 3rd, I believe. And then the other show is at the Mays Lake Peabody Estate. It's called The Natural World. And I have a piece in there called Growing Through the Fence.
Oh.
And I call it my ugly painting. And it was conceived when a friend challenged me to create an ugly painting.
Right.
Because I was telling her how people always say my work is beautiful. And I'm like, but it's more than beautiful. It's beautiful. It's spiritual. Right. There's so much more to my work than just beauty.
And right.
I don't get that feedback as much as people always saying it's beautiful. So she said, well, why don't you try to make an ugly painting? So I did. I chose a really ugly old beat up canvas that I covered over several times with gesso and collage. And I said, I don't care about this canvas. I'm going to throw some stuff down there. And I then chose some colors that I normally wouldn't work with. And I chose some really large, clumsy brushes as tools. And I made this painting and I was like, I kind of like it. I was thinking growth. I was only thinking about growth.
Right.
And then I sat with it for a couple of weeks because I didn't love it. It was okay. I think I put it in you were in my guest room at the time and you got to look at it. And
oh yeah, I liked it.
You liked it in the first stage, but I felt like it didn't have the depth and I felt like it needed more texture. So I went in several weeks later and added some layers of collage and more texture to it and some really intimate line work, which added the depth and the intimacy that I wanted it to happen. So now it's in a show. It's called The Natural World at Mays Lake Peabody Estate.
It's not called Growing Through the Fence?
It'll be up there. No, the painting is Growing Through the Fence, but the show is called The Natural World. And it's part of the Chicago Alliance of Visual Artists. It's their annual summer show. I'm honored to be in that show.
Where is that? In what city?
It's in Oak Brook, Illinois at the Mays Lake Peabody Estate. It's a historic estate on beautiful grounds and they have a lovely gallery there.
And what about your scarves in the Iggy Notbart Museum?
Oh, that's
the Nature Museum?
In September, I'm working on a group of scarves for the Peggy Notbart Nature Museum. They're remodeling.
In Chicago?
In Chicago. They're remodeling their shop and they want to include some of my work there. So that'll be there beginning in September.
Wow,
yeah,
amazing. That's very on brand for you, right? Because the butterflies.
Oh, the butterflies. I could tell some great stories about butterflies and moths. I have great stories right now.
Do you want to share anything?
Sure. So I've been working on some butterfly scarves for the kids always called Notbart Museum. They called it the Butterfly Museum.
Right. Because there's the butterfly exhibit.
There's a haven there which has thousands of butterflies in it. So
it's pretty awesome.
I was working on some scarves for that and I went out into my garden to turn off the sprinkler the other day and I saw this giant moth. It was bigger than
Huge.
My hand. Bigger than my hand. And it was colorful. It was gold with blue and pink and black and white in it. And I'd never seen anything.
A moth, especially. Yeah.
A moth.
Usually it's just like brown.
It was a moth when I saw it.
Yeah.
I ran in the house and got my camera. I ran and it was still in the same position, laying on the ground with its wings totally open. And I took some photos. And then, of course, my phone will tell you what it is. It was a Polyphenus moth.
Wow.
Which is the largest moth in North America, and it only lives for 4 days.
Wow.
And it's nocturnal, so I don't know why it was alive and well in my garden in the middle of the day. I think because it was thirsty and the sprinkler was because it was in a dry spot. It was very hot. And so it has 4 days to mate and lay its eggs. It has to find a mate and lay its eggs in four days. And how does it get that big in 4 days?
That's crazy.
It's crazy to me, but
wow.
Described that to my husband. He said, talk about speed dating.
That's really,
so the
no kidding.
To speed date. And then a couple days later, we're having breakfast on the deck and this beautiful black swallowtail. He's fluttering around my plants. And the swallowtail is black with beautiful white and blue markings. And it has the wings that kind of come down to a drip. It's so pretty.
Wow.
So I was like, oh yeah, I have to include some swallowtails, you know, of course. So I'm thinking about swallowtails and I'm drawing them in my sketchbook. And the next day I went to cut some parsley and in my parsley plant were caterpillars.
No way.
Yes, way. They were swallowtail caterpillars. Apparently that swallowtail wasn't just fluttering around. It was laying eggs in my parsley plants. So now I have a cage. I covered the plants with a cage and I have about 7 or 8 caterpillars They've grown to be about this big.
Wow.
And they ate the entire plant. I had to run out and buy them an asparagus plant. And they are turning into the cocoon stage as we speak.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I'm
so
super
fun.
Excited that I'm going to hatch my first bunch of swallowtails.
And what a great source of inspiration.
Absolutely.
For your work.
It was a gift. It was truly a gift.
Wow.
At the time, with both those things coming to me, I felt like it was like I had
divine.
To it was divine.
Wow.
Saying, Tara, you're doing the right thing. Keep going. This is where you should be. This is what
totally,
you should be
doing.
Totally. Yeah,
amazing. Magical. Omen.
Magical.
Sign. Mm-hmm. Wow. And what about connecting with you on social media?
Tara Riley Art. Again,
okay.
Whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn, or
Etsy,
and also Instagram.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd love to hear from any of you in the audience. Please feel free to tag me, to like me, to follow me, and also to write to me and let me know your stories, share your experiences, ask questions. I love to engage with people. I love getting feedback and connecting. It's all about that. So
I also just want to say for anybody listening to this podcast, if you have any amazing story about healing through creativity or your creative journey or your creative process, I would love to hear it in the comments. So feel free to drop us a comment below, just sharing your personal story. I would love to hear it. Anything else you want to share with the audience before we finish up?
Keep creating. Never stop. Yeah.
Amazing.
Just keep creating.
Well, thank you so much. Totally. Couldn't agree more. Thank you all so much for listening to Natalie Saves the World, one podcast at a time. We didn't save the world today, but I hope you got some great insights on creativity, creative passions, turning your creativity into a career, and hopefully some insights you can take away into this next era of creativity for yourself. So thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Natalie.